Hello, I'm Eric Jansen. You're tuned to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. This week, the submission. Are gay rights civil rights? Does the fight for gay rights deserve the same respect as the battle for women's rights or racial equality? Or are gay activists just riding on the coattails of earlier real civil rights activists? Is verbal gay bashing still more acceptable than racist comments, even here in our Bay Area pro-gay bubble? A provocative play, now in its West Coast premiere at the New Conservatory Theater Center in San Francisco, gets into these questions and many more. It's called The Submission, and here to talk about this play and the issues it raises are director Ben Randall and lead actress Sam Jackson. In The Submission, Sam plays Emily, an African-American actress hired by a gay white male playwright to play his alter ego, because his play has been accepted for production by a prestigious national theater festival, but he submitted it under an assumed name, the name of a black woman. He dares not reveal himself as the playwright until it's too late to stop the production. Well, if you're a little confused, worry not. We'll explain more in a minute. This is Sam Jackson's first role at New Conservatory Theater Center, but she's no stranger to Bay Area stages. She was featured in recent Bay Area One Act Festival. She also works with New Conservatory Theater Center's Youth Aware Educational Program, bringing theater to schools in Northern California. Some themes in The Submission are included in current Youth Aware productions. Sam Jackson, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you.
Ben Randall directs The Submission. It's his sixth direction for New Conservatory Theater. His direction of Doubt a couple of years ago earned him a Bay Area Theater Critics Circle Best Director nomination, and he's directed for many other Bay Area theater companies. Ben Randall, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks to both of you for being here. Now, I noticed as I gave that little description of the play, Sam, you kind of were waving your hand a little bit, like maybe didn't quite get it right. So tell me.
No, oh, okay. Actually, I was very impressed. It was actually exactly what I would think about this play.
So. Oh, well, that's good. So far,
well
so
done.
Good. So let's get a little bit more into what The Submission is about. I gave it, it's kind of a very brief, rough sketch of it. How, you know, when you were first getting involved in this production, both of you, how did you describe this to your friends? Sam? Oh, who wants to go first?
It definitely, it's important when describing it to kind of just to describe each of the characters' physical characteristics. Mm-hmm. And I always describe it as a young, gay, Yale graduate, white playwright.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He writes a play about a black family in the projects and doesn't think he can tell that story.
Right.
Because that, I think, is the central crux of the whole story.
And like, he doesn't have the permission to tell that story.
Exactly, right. Which is why he creates a non-diplume in the first place, because he mm-hmm. feels as though people will not accept that story from a guy like him.
Mm-hmm. So the play that he submits is about a single black mother, if I have it right.
Yeah.
Although we don't really even, in
no.
the play, we never even see
it.
That play.
You
we
just
never
hear
even
this
hear
little
tiny bit.
More than one line of the play, and that's it. There's one line that you hear, and that's it, the entire play.
Okay. He might read something when he's talking to you, when he's talking to your character. When Danny is talking to Emily, and she suggests, oh, maybe a little slightly different
right.
scene.
Exactly. So there's a one line there. Oh, I actually just kind of...
There's one. You just realized that? There's
one line.
One line, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so and he has this inspiration actually when he's riding on the subway.
Yes.
And he hears some kids talking to themselves or to each other, and there's something about
one of the kids, I think. Yeah, one of the kids says, comments on his shoes and says, shoes a homo would wear, quote. And he gets all fussy about this comment.
Wait, black kids?
Oh, black kids? Yeah, black kids. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to. Yeah, so it's this whole...
And then Emily asks...
That's a lot to see.
Ben, back off just a little bit from the mic. Thanks. Thanks.
Emily does ask, were they black kids? And obviously, everybody in this society right now would think, oh, a bunch of kids talking rowdily, you know, in the back of the bus or the back of the subway, automatically you think black kids. But Emily, not thinking much of it, mm-hmm. has set something off in Danny about this whole idea that we all have this racial, these racial stereotypes that we're not willing to admit to.
Right.
Anyway, he gets this comment about his shoes, and it just sends him on this tangent of what this kid's life must be like and what his mom must be like, and he must live in the projects and be really poor and all of this assuming because of his race and of his comments that turns into this wonderful, allegedly wonderful play.
He makes all these assumptions.
Yes.
And he submits the play under an assumed name.
Yes.
And lo
very
and behold, this play,
name.
A very ethnic, could you tell us what this name is? Because I can't pronounce it.
Shalia Ganatamobi.
Ganatamobi.
Yes.
Yes, because I did read it and I know, okay.
Yes.
So, and you play the part of, no, you don't, well, yeah, Emily plays,
yes.
You play the part of Emily who plays the part of
Shalia.
Shalia.
Right.
Ganatamobi.
Ganantamobi.
Ganantamobi.
I know. It's a big mess. But Emily doesn't even take on that name for very long. She ends up admitting to the festival writers that, oh, I am the one who took on an assumed identity because I didn't want it to seem like I was just an actor writing play.
Right.
So there's so much, I don't know, mess.
So can you give us a little bit of... a little bit of flavor of the play. I know I'm not, expecting you to do a scene because your co-star's not here, and you can't say the F word, and the F word is in this play
it's
all over the place.
Yes.
Sprinkled, liberally. Mm. Like, do people really talk like that? I guess some people do.
Oh, absolutely.
But,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Our rehearsal room was I think, just as sprinkled.
Don't say that, Ben.
Well, because it was in the air.
So, but can you give us something to give our listeners an idea of the the level of the strong passion, the vitriol that flies between playwright Danny and actress Emily?
Sure. At a certain point in the play, Danny and Emily are finally kind of hashing out what they're going to do with their piece that they're creating and this mess that they're creating. Emily asks what happens when it's all over, and Danny starts to talk about how they're going to get famous and how the Emily is going to win a Blony. And Blony is really just a fun little word that he's made up for a black Tony. And Emily gets a little bit, tiffed about this. So they get into a whole discussion, and Emily gets a little upset, and Danny decides to comfort her by saying, we're the same. Our struggles are the same. I know where you're at. I've been there. And Emily gets a little bit more tiffed about this. He goes on to say, quote, Danny, if you think that my life as a black woman in this society, in this particular society, the United States of whatever, is somehow in some way, in any way comparable to your middle-class realization that you like boys more than not, then you are living in a ridiculously large world of crazy. And I'm kind of, I can't think of a big enough word to even flabbergasted, seriously. So that's just the beginnings of the angry that Emily spits out, and it gets uglier and uglier and uglier.
And that's kind
of
the first confrontational scene they have. And by the way, she substituted boys because this is radio. It was a little slightly more vulgar than that.
Just a little bit.
But, it's just full of fun, juicy language.
Mm-hmm.
And when we spoke on the phone last weekend, you mentioned that... you liked this production because it gave you a chance to play somebody like you, and also that you've had similar discussions with some of your friends. Not that vitriolic, but since you're in the theater world, a lot of your friends are gay guys. And,
yeah, absolutely.
So this is not a discussion like you haven't actually had before.
Right. I mean, I think as much dirty language and as many awful things that, as are said on stage, the topics of discussion ring true. So everything that they're saying is true. Just the way they're saying it isn't quite how you should be talking to your friends. I've definitely had many a conversation about the differences and similarities between the gay struggle and the black struggle, or civil rights and, women's rights and black rights and gay rights, and how they all intertwine and, go off in their separate tangents. But I really did love playing Emily I really do love playing Emily because she is so much like me. She's strong and intelligent, I like to think that I am, and, a very well-spoken young woman, but her views on gay rights differ from mine quite a bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This reminds me of a debate which has gone on many places, but as a journalist in the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, years ago, there was a debate quite... heated about whether or not the Gay Journalists Organization should be included in this Unity Conference, which mm-hmm. was the Black Journalists and the Asian Journalists and the Hispanic Journalists Associations, and could we possibly be at that Unity Conference because we didn't quite really qualify as oppressed peoples or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely, and that definitely is one of the many discussions in the play. Is essentially that basic question: is homosexuality a minority? Does it make you, just because you were discriminated against for that, does that make your plight the same plight?
Right.
Because as Emily kind of points out in the play, from her perspective, no, you can walk down the street and that's not, and you can essentially pass.
Right.
Or you can, or if you have a relationship with a woman, then every door opens up to you. Right. So that can change in a minute, where she is who she is, and that does not change at all. She can't change that. So there are
two different...
I can't
change the way people see me.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So therefore, those are two different plights in her eyes. But there is definitely... That's even something I think that even changes to, or is questioned in her eyes through the course of the show.
How so? How is it questioned?
Well, I think it comes back to the idea that she has, that Danny has about who can tell these stories. And in that scene that Sam was talking about earlier, when Danny writes a story from the experience on the subway, he says that he writes it from a place of empathy. He writes it from, he wants to understand that kid mm-hmm. and his life and what his life must be like. And he truly believes that he's coming from a place of empathy.
Compassion.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't understand, he doesn't know why it is, but he does believe that he should be able to tell that story. Or more importantly, or more specifically, that he doesn't own that story, but that we all in a way collectively own each other's stories. And he says, I don't understand that, but I know that's true. And it's something at the time that Emily, I don't think, agrees with at all.
No, she doesn't. She's just going through the motions to, you know, let's just get this project done. Yeah. Little boy, like, let's just get this project done, little boy, and we can move on.
Yeah.
But by the end of the play, she definitely has a great
Don't give it away. But
four things.
but definitely she comes around to some. She does see that in a way we do all own each other's stories, and in the way that Danny. And the way Danny said.
You're telling me not to give it away.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Ben Randall, director of, and Sam Jackson, one of the lead actors in The Submission, now in its West Coast premiere at New Conservatory Theater Center. The play deals with, among other things, issues of race and class and how gay rights fit into the overall civil rights fight. It's in its last 2 weeks, closes December 16th. For information and tickets, the New Conservatory Theater Center's website is nctcsf.org. That's nctcsf.org. Do you think that, this is my impression when I saw the play a few weeks ago, was that I felt like I got to know Danny a little better somehow, and I got to know his weaknesses and his, you know, I get to see him a little more negatively as the play progressed. And I didn't feel the same way about Emily. Maybe Danny's got a little more stage time. I don't know. A little bit more. Probably more. Mm-hmm. And also, it's written, I assume, by a gay man, this play. So perhaps he's more, you know, maybe he's more critical of himself in a way by making Danny look worse. Or maybe it's just my reaction. Maybe she comes off just as badly as he does. What's your sense of that? Does Emily get away with more in a way?
I think there's lots of parts to that. I will say it's dangerous to say that she would get off because of the playwright happens to be a man or it feels that he's closer. Because I think that would also mean that I would not want to imply that Jeff Talbot believes some of the things that Danny says.
No.
Which I don't think he does. No. I think that's probably just as far from him as some of the things that Emily says. Mm-hmm. But I would say that Emily does get off a bit. Because I think some of the things that she says, namely some insensitive things about gays, I think are more, frankly, acceptable to an audience's ears than some racist language.
They're still more acceptable in society at large.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not that I think that they're not as politically correct, of course, but there's that scene we were just talking about, that same explosive scene when he mentions baloney.
Yes.
The audience just sits bolt up. When Bloney is mentioned, and it lingers over the entire scene, and I watch the audience not even notice that she says some pretty insensitive things in that very scene about his sexuality, and Isaac doesn't even notice because they're still really hung up on what he just said, even though he says some worse things than that. But
very true.
But so I think in a way the crimes that she commits in the play are in some ways lessened because of that. Though I think she says some things that are almost just as nasty, or at least she says the worst, just as the worst things that she can say, just like he says the worst things that he can say. I just think that the worst things that he can say matter a great deal more.
Yeah. I also think, I don't know, we were talking, I've talked about this before, that Emily oftentimes is playing defense to Danny's offense. So Danny tends to start the argument and Emily tends to finish it. So the things that she's saying are definitely bad and I would never excuse them. But again, if you're playing in defense, everything's a little bit different.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If you're not
he started
one,
it.
Yeah, he started it. I didn't do it. No. Yeah, so I think that half the time, the awful things that she is saying are really just an eye for an eye. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just trying to get the same reaction out of him that he gets out of her.
Right.
It is, and it's also, I should point out, it is his story. It is mainly, he does it like double the stage time
that
Emily does. So it is his story in that there is more time for him to step in it, you could say.
That's true.
He has more opportunities, in fact, every single scene.
Right. And step in it, he does. And you know, again, without totally giving away the ending, it seems like he, in the ultimately, he's sort of in a, you know, he's in a pretty kind of messed up situation at the end, whereas Emily seems to be doing relatively fine. Is that fair? Would you think so? I mean, was that your perception, Sam?
Yeah, well, it depends on the audience that night. Honestly, the audience is definitely the fifth character in this show. Sometimes we'll think that Emily's getting away scot-free, and sometimes Emily is just the demon in the room. It really depends.
And you can tell this from the audience reaction?
Yes.
How does that work? How does the audience reaction vary from play to play during the play as opposed to afterwards during the talkbacks or whatever?
I would say laughter.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I would say what they laugh at.
Mm-hmm. And is that usually an indication of discomfort?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes an indication of discomfort. Sometimes it's an indication of, oh, girl, I heard that. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. So there's this like level playing ground sometimes, and sometimes the things that Emily says will get like a giggle because, oh, she's just being funny, and sometimes the things that Danny says will get a, oh my gosh, you know, will get a lot of visceral reactions from the audience. Mm-hmm. And very quickly.
Or the way Emily will respond to what Danny said. Danny says something really, really inflammatory, and she responds a certain way and gets a huge laugh. It's like, oh, well, they're on Emily's side
now.
Uh-huh. Or if they don't and there's nothing, and then later on he says something and gets a huge laugh, we're like, wow, they still really like him. Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because they...
They hated him.
It'd be interesting to see it a second time and see if it's much different. I went on a Sunday afternoon. I don't know if the matinee is a very different crowd than the nighttime shows, but...
Matinees have been some of our best crowds, honestly. Yeah. Uh-huh. It usually doesn't work like that in theater.
I like matinee because people who get up and go to the theater for a 2 o'clock show want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't buy the ticket a month ago.
Right.
they want to be there that day. So I think matinees tend to be really, really focused and intelligent crowds.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that this is mostly a gay audience because... it's part of the Pride season, and New Conservatory is known for you know, presenting gay-themed plays?
I guess you could say it's mostly a gay audience or a very gay-friendly audience. So either way, you're not getting a whole lot of, and like, pardon my assumption, but you're not getting a whole lot of, like, frat boys coming in and, you know, or people who would ever be comfortable with gay bashing in any way or negative language against homosexuality.
Have you had many black people show up to the show?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So the word's gotten around. That this...
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
and it tends to be that way in NCTC. I find that they will... you'll get the core subscribers, which are predominantly gay. And then as word gets out to whatever community needs to know about the show, we'll find the show. Mm-hmm. It tends to be. So I'm excited to go back and even to see the new audiences, because I imagine they've started to change.
They have. It's been really interesting.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
So can you tell me about some of the audience feedback that you've gotten, not just during the show, like laughter and so on, but you've had a couple of post-play discussions, formal, kind of more formal, and I assume you must have had people come up to you and say things. What kind of, you know, actual comments do you get besides the, laughter or... you go girl.
The go girls are my favorite. No. I've gotten... a few people come up and just let us know how important this topic is and how important it is that this topic is being spoken about, whether it's, you know, in this visceral way or just, you know, over a cup of coffee with a friend. But it's a topic that holds a lot of tension and people are not very comfortable speaking about it. So this play allows them to get all of the crazy, hateful ideas out and then, you know, go chat with your friends over a cocktail and talk about what was true and what wasn't true.
Right, right.
The one comment I remember during the talk back that I thought was dead on, because I thought that when I was watching that matinee that day too, I thought it as well, was someone commented on how relevant it seemed to the post-election debate or discourse. And I think that was, it's dead on. We were working on it during the campaign before the election. And, you know, indeed, I would be trying to listen to the debates on my iPad before rehearsal. And so we were very plugged into the campaign, the full cast and team and everything. And so we were kind of aware that it would be relevant to this topic and this idea of race relations in post-racial America, mm-hmm. and how it would fit in with the campaign for obvious reasons. But I actually worried that it would be irrelevant once the election happened. That it'd be like, oh, if Obama got reelected, then not irrelevant, certainly, because we're still, you know, in this quote unquote post-racial mm-hmm. America. Right. But I feared that it would be less relevant because right. we'd be actively in a campaign mode with these like stealth comments of like "Take Back America" and mm-hmm. things like that. And
so, did you say that perceptions of the play have changed since
yes.
the election? And how
yes.
so?
Frankly, I remember the week I saw it, I think, was maybe the week after the election. I was the talk back, mm-hmm. and I remember hearing one of Danny's big rants about that he is now a minority.
Right.
And I remember thinking, oh my, there are several very, very prominent people in the Republican Party who are lamenting this very thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in these exact words. They're not mincing words, anything about it. They're actually saying, you know, the traditional America is gone. It's gone forever. This is the new reality. They're saying these very things. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting that it in a way, Danny and I represented these people, and that was so unexpected. I never would have thought that going before the election. So it's almost as if the race relations are actually even more heightened now after this election, just like they were, I think, heightened after 2008.
You're listening to Out on the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Sam Jackson, one of the lead actors in, and Ben Randall, director of The Submission, now on its West Coast premiere at New Conservatory Theater Center. The play deals with issues of race, class, homophobia, and how gay rights fit into the overall civil rights fight. It's in its last 2 weeks, closes December 16th. For info and tickets, the New Conservatory Theater Center's website is nctcsf.org. We've just got a few minutes left, and Sam, before I forget, I want to talk to you about the Youth Aware program.
Yes.
So tell us what that is, first of all.
The Youth Aware program is a program at NCTC, headed up by Sarah Staley, who's the director. She's fabulous, by the way. We have a couple of different shows. I'm currently in our production of Outspoken. And we go to, it's a show about bullying and acceptance and, you know, it's okay to be gay and it's okay to be black, it's okay to be Latino, it's okay to be Christian or Democrat or Republican, all these different things that teens are struggling with today. Mm-hmm. We go to different middle schools and high schools throughout Central and Northern California. Actually went to Nevada City today for school up there. But yeah, we go to these different schools and we have a post-discussion or post-show discussion with the children and kind of get an idea of how many schools in this area have a GSA or how many schools...
It's Gay Straight Alliance.
Yes, a Gay Straight Alliance, yes. And how many of the students recognize, you know, the language that they're using. And, you know, the term "that's so gay" is a very good big term out right now. And just kind of making sure that they recognize that phrases like that mean something so negative can affect
that has been around
negatively.
For so long in schools. I can't even believe it. I was a school bus driver in Santa Cruz County probably 15, 20 years ago, and I remember some junior high school students saying like, "That's so gay."
Yeah.
It's like the same way they say it today. It sounds like, is that, can that change?
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Really,
so we're working
terms.
On making that change and kind of giving, you know, letting the students know that they have a voice in, you know, what goes on in their schools and they can make the difference.
And what kind of, how, is Nevada City the farthest you've been from San Francisco in the Youth Aware program, or?
Yes, been, this year. Yes, I believe so. It was quite the
drive.
Have
you been farther in a political sense than Nevada City? Is Nevada City, how, you know, is that progressive or not?
Actually, I mean, the school that we went to was a continuation school. So actually a lot of the students, you know, did have struggles or were homosexual and left their public schools because it was too much or the bullying was too much. So then they go to a continuation school to finish their careers or their high school careers, rather. So it was much more progressive than I expected in Nevada City. But surprisingly enough, schools just in El Cerrito or in Richmond County are much less progressive than you would think being so close to San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've gotten a lot of hateful things said. And
in schools?
Yes.
Like what kind of stuff? I mean, if you can say it on the air.
Oh.
Approximate.
Well, no, we just have had, during our post-show discussions, had a lot of angry rants after. Okay, just backtrack. There's a line in the show where...
Outspoken.
In Outspoken, yes. I'm sorry, in Outspoken. And it's the first time that one of the characters actually comes out as being gay. And he says, you know, I have all of these amazing friends and my parents are great and I've never had any discrimination against me at all, but all my friends have and they are angry with me for that, despite the fact that I'm a boy who likes boys. And we have had just outroars of, ew, that's nasty, don't touch me, don't get close to me, you... blah, blah, all these negative terms. Okay. And then even after, for the post-show discussion, you know, if we ask the question, how would somebody who's out, like the magician, who was the character that I was just speaking about, be treated like at your school? And we get anywhere from, oh, he'd be my best friend, to like, he'd get beaten up every day. Or, you know, everybody would talk about him behind his back, or they better not come here, and like all these things. So it's really bizarre to see... schools that are so close to this, what we feel like is this safe, glorious hub of acceptance in San Francisco, that are, what, 20 minutes out, that just have no idea,
right?
You know, what their words can do.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful education program that New Conservatory is putting on. Very briefly, Ben, can you tell us about the Pansy production that you're going to be working on very soon?
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is actually a piece that the solo performance artist Evan Johnson and I have been working on for 2 years, I believe it is, quite a while. It's been in development at New Conservatory. He's part of the Emerging Artist Program, and so this is a commission, and it's a very, very exciting project. Contrasting contemporary gay youth culture and that of the early 90s HIV epidemic, or I should say the HIV epidemic in the early 90s.
And when is that production starting?
That happens in, we're doing June this year.
Okay, so ways off.
Not too far, and really exciting.
Thanks very much. I want to thank my guests, Sam Jackson, one of the lead actors, and Ben Randall, director of The Submission, now in its West Coast premiere at New Conservatory Theater Center. It's in its last 2 weeks, closes December 16th. For info and tickets, New Conservatory Theater Center's website is nctcsf.org. Sam and Ben, thanks so much for joining us out in the Bay.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
If you missed part of our discussion, you can hear the whole program on our website, outinthebay.com. It should be up by 9 o'clock tonight, Thursday night. Speaking of our website, great news. We've just completed a revamp of our website. Podcasts are still free, and now you can hear about a dozen of our favorites from our 8 years of shows. My personal favorites include interviews with Phyllis Lyon and the late Del Martin, who told us about gay and lesbian life in San Francisco in the 1950s, and a feature on Liberace, glitziest pianist of the last century. Look for them under the Listen tab at outinthebay.com and let us know what you think of the new site. By the way, you'll be able to get to the new site from outinthebay.org as well as outinthebay.com. And in case we're taping this Monday, in case it's not all up there by Thursday, go to outinthebay.org and check the favorites out. Thanks to Jamie Borshuk for the redesign. That's Jamie Borshuk. Learn more about her at her website, jtothebee.com. That's jtothebee.com. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KLW for Studio Yosin Airtime, and thanks to tonight's engineer, Debbie Kennedy. We've been producing Out in the Bay for 8 years. We love your words of encouragement. We love your financial support, too. It's easy and tax-deductible. We're nonprofit. If you donate by December 31st, you'll get a receipt that could help your 2012 tax bill be a little lower. Thank you so much. You can also get free podcasts and the Stitcher app that lets you hear radio programs on mobile devices, all free at outinthebay.com. Our theme music was composed and performed by San Francisco musician Holly Ann Mead. We'd love to hear from you with segment suggestions, general comments, and questions. So write to us, Eric at outinthebay.com and Marilyn at outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.